Welcome to Bindwaves, the official podcast of the Brain Injury Network of Dallas. I'm Brian White, Bind's Executive Director. On each episode, we'll be providing insight into the brain injury community. We'll be talking to members and professionals regarding their stories and the important role of Bind's Clubhouse. We work as a team to inspire hope, community, and a sense of purpose to survivors, caregivers, and the public. Thank you for tuning into Bindwaves. Let's get on with the show.
Hi, I'm Carrie, a stroke survivor and a member of Bind.
And I'm Kezia, stroke survivor and member of Bind as well. And today on this episode, you're going to hear me and Carrie just having a chit chat. We're going to be talking about really what happens after a brain injury and how the brain injury really just affected our day-to-day life. After a brain injury, really the day-to-day life just became very challenged. And a lot of the times we didn't even think about it. We think about like what happens at the hospital, what happens at rehabilitation, what kind of occupational therapists did we have that really helped us in recovery, speech therapy, physical therapy. But when we get home, a lot of things happen that we didn't even think about, our family didn't think about, and our friends didn't think about. So we're going to be talking about that. And as you hear in every episode, you realize that a brain injury and after a brain injury, just our life changes. So we're going to talk about today on this episode. And then the next couple of episodes, you're going to be hearing about it. Just day-to-day life and day-to-day life skills that we just had to relearn about it. So I hope that you guys find this episode really interesting and that you enjoy the conversation between Carrie and I.
So I guess it's my turn. So that's one thing I think a lot of people don't really think about is how much really things change. So just for me and for a lot of the survivors that are members here at Bind, I know they had a similar experience to me. So my stroke caused my left side of my body to be completely paralyzed. My arm didn't move. My leg didn't work. My knees didn't work. My ankle didn't work. Nothing worked. So I couldn't stand. Obviously, I couldn't walk. I couldn't use my left arm, my fingers. So while we're in the hospital, that's what you think about. That's the first thing we learn how to do. We learn how to just stand. And they call it weight shift so that you're not just standing all on your good leg. You're standing balanced proportionately on both legs, which is very challenging and hard. And for me, because of the way my ankle rolled, I had to get what we call an AFO. It's an ankle foot orthotic before I could even take my first steps. So that's a lot of things you have to learn about is, you know, not everyone needs an ankle foot orthotic, but that doesn't, so like most people put their foot like this, mine does this. I can't put it down flat. So I have a brace, for lack of a better word, that keeps my foot flat. So that was a new change for me because I still cannot walk without that brace. That gave me the independence to be able to walk. But when I first went home to live with mom and dad, you know, I could not really walk. I barely could transfer from my wheelchair to the bed, from the bed to the wheelchair to the car, that kind of stuff. So mom would have to roll me to the bathroom, get inside the bathroom, pick me, you know, help me stand up, and then she would have to walk me into the shower to sit on the shower chair, help me take this AFO off. And then, unfortunately, actually, she had to help me shower because, again, my left arm didn't work. So that's a lot of fun being 38 years old and having your mom shave your armpits for you.
Yeah.
I do not recommend.
Yeah. But, it must be very uncomfortable for sure. I actually don't have, like, now through recovery, I don't have that experience. But right now that you were talking about getting in bed and just, like, those kinds of changes, when I first got out of the hospital, in the hospital, obviously, I had the bed that they would like turn on and move up a little bit. I had surgeries and I had to wear a helmet. And I didn't realize, and neither did my parents realize, that moving back to, at the time, my apartment, my bed was too flat and I had to get pillows and I had to be told that I had to stay still in my sleep. And I'm like, I sleep on my like arm like normally. I don't sleep on my back. I don't sleep on my belly. Like I move in my sleep. But at that time, my parents had to be educated that due to the surgery that I had and that I didn't have part of my skull, my cranium, I was not allowed to move in my sleep. So I had to like get trained on how to sleep going back home.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it was so uncomfortable. I honestly don't even move in my sleep till this day. Like I think I just like think about it. And I mean, now I do move like a little tiny bit, but I don't move that much because I had to stay still and I had to have pillows. And then when I moved to Texas, I actually got a new bed that like I can use a little controller.
Now they have those nice beds that everyone has that they can sit right, put up their feet. Like, yeah. They've turned the regular beds into hospital beds.
Yeah, so I got one of those beds to make it easier for all the other months I still had to have my helmet. But it's so crazy.
Did you have to sleep with your helmet on?
No, thank goodness. Okay. No, I had to take it off. And in Texas, it's so hot.
Oh, and I can only imagine. Well, that's the thing. Is like I don't sleep with my brace on. I don't need it to sleep. And it's much more comfortable without it. But if I wake up in the middle of the night and need to go to the bathroom, well, I have to take the time to put it back on, to put my shoes on, because it's plastic. So it's not like I can just put it on and go walk into the bathroom on a slippery floor. Yay, I'm going to fall again and make another brain injury. So no, you don't want to do that. So that's a lot of things you didn't think about. And then this is another one that I give people a hard time about, or not people, but guys, when people were talking about, you know, you have to relearn how to dress. You have to relearn how to dress yourself. Like a lot of people don't think about, because of the left side paralysis, I have to put my left arm in the sleeve first and then my right arm and then pull it over my head. Same with my pants. The left leg has to go in first and then the right foot, right leg, because it doesn't work if you don't. I mean, we used to do we had an event at our gala years ago where we brought like button up shirts and we would have our guests try to put it on. We would say, okay, pick an arm and you're paralyzed. Now put this shirt on. And they would always put it on the good arm first. And then they couldn't figure out how to get their shirt on. So it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Not really.
But I actually met a woman. I don't know if she was like my age now, like in her 30s, and she had a stroke. And it was so hard for her family to believe that part of recovery is learning how to put your eyeliner on. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my goodness, this is so true. Like, I forget about those steps and early on in my recovery is how to do my makeup. Yeah. You know, like it's not very visible, but like I actually can't feel part of my hand on my right side. I can't feel these two fingers, I can't feel that much. And the third one, I can kind of feel it. But, like, on this side, I can't. So it's, like, I burn myself a lot. But, yeah, it's so hard that, like, these are things you learn, like, in your, you know, in the teenage year and your practice and how to get, you know, dress yourself up. And then, like, at some point, something can happen and then you forget and then you have to relearn these skills.
I know that for me was, I mean, like makeup, I don't wear a lot anyway, so I just went, I don't need it. But like putting on a bra again, that was absolutely horrific. Didn't want to do that. Unfortunately, you still need to wear them, I guess, but you know, whatever. But my biggest thing, like when you talk about the makeup and making yourself like pretty, I've always had long hair, like shoulder length or longer. And so that I could in the summer, like Kezia said, we're in Texas. So in the summer I can put it in a ponytail. Well, how do you put your hair in a ponytail when you only have one hand? Yeah. Can't figure it out. I've been trying to work on it. So now I have short hair because if you think about it, most people have big brushes when they blow dry their hair. They have curling irons, flat irons. They have all this stuff to fix their hair. I just blow dry my hair and go on about my day because it's just those things you don't think about that you have to totally relearn. Like you wouldn't think you would have to relearn how to walk, how to dress yourself, how to take a shower. Yeah,
and these are things that you don't really know you have to relearn until you go back home and step into places that you no longer have a nurse next to your side. You no longer have like a therapy that's helping you walk again. And then for me, like one of the biggest things that I had to relearn, and not only myself, but also my friends, my family, is my challenges in speaking. When I was actually in rehabilitation in Chicago, I thought they had these dogs there for me to make me feel happy and Like, I could pet dogs. It was great. But I later understood that these dogs were coming to me so I can practice speaking with these cuties, these dogs, so cute. And really learning how to say words correctly, because the dogs will not follow what you're saying if you don't say it, like, correctly.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
It was like practicing. And then also just, like, what do I want them to do, right? And it was just very interesting for that. And then obviously, like, I got a dog in Texas, Halo. If no one knows Halo, you will at some point. She's my bestie. And that was kind of it. Like, if this worked for me at rehabilitation, how can it work for me at home? Being able to speak with her and really learn along with me on how to talk was really big. And then also just communicating with my family, that was really difficult. I think in a hospital, in rehabilitation, you're seen as you need help. You're seen that way. But at home, you're like, I was looking, right? I look normal, right? So how do I explain that to people? And how do I have my family understand that, especially if, like, for example, my brother wasn't at the hospital a lot. He didn't see me that in a traumatic kind of way, but he needed to learn how to have the patience to talk to me and how do I treat myself with grace and with patience for me, myself. Like, how do I talk and how do I communicate what I need? Because in the hospitals, all of those people are very aware of patients and help and how to help people, right? They're the doctors, the nurses, the therapists that have this day-to-day experience, but our family doesn't. So it was definitely a challenge being back home. So it was very difficult.
No, it is. I mean, and like, I didn't have communication issues to say, you know, but you still have to relearn how to communicate and socialize with other people. I mean, that's a big thing, is because people look at you different. People want to treat you different. Like, even my parents, I had to, and y'all probably heard me say it some on the podcast before, but I had to reset boundaries. I mean, I moved home, a 38-year-old independent woman who now is a 38-year-old woman, wheelchair bound and needs a lot of help. And they no longer saw me as that 38-year-old independent woman. They saw I don't even know what age they probably were trying to treat me as, but a teenager, let's just say that needed help with everything. Not a toddler, but, you know, but constant. Do you need anything? Can I help you? What can I do for you? What do you need? It just caused frustration for me, and I didn't know what to do. So it took a while before I realized that I had to sit them down and say, okay, we have to talk like adults. We have to have a real communication, you know, and talk about how we're going to work around in this house. You need to give me the chance to be independent. Now, if you see me doing something unsafe, absolutely come and stop me. But if I want something, I will ask for it. You don't have to constantly ask me, do I want something?
Yeah. Yeah. And before I talk a little bit, I do want to remind all of our listeners that you can contact us and tell us what you want to hear from us and what you want to learn about brain injury. It could be anything. Like today, it's just a conversation about day-to-day life and how it changed after the strokes that Carrie and I had, but it could be any like that. And then we just always believe that you guys will follow us every Thursday on your favorite platforms. I was going to say about your experience with boundaries. We've had actually, in the future, in a couple of weeks, you are going to listen to us, like you listeners. We're going to listen to episodes that are talking about these these topics from our guests. One of our guests actually is a chaplain
at UT Southwestern.
Yeah, and he talks about these experiences he's had with survivors, but also with the caregivers, and how do you do with that, right? It's really interesting for sure. And then also I think on behalf of the communication with families and the brain injury survivors, when do you say that you need help is very difficult. But also, like, on my end, I don't have any mobility issues, but really, how do I get back to where I was before at managing my own money, managing like my own scheduling, what I want to do with my days? That was very difficult. How do I take my medicine? I went from never taking medicine to all of a sudden taking like so many medications. Yeah. And when do I pick them up from my doctor? How do I ask? I don't understand what this medicine is for. It was definitely difficult just learning how to control your own day-to-day life. And that's something that we had to relearn. And not only us, but also our family, our friends that are going to be there supporting us. And, hey, do you remember that you need your seizure medication by 8 a.m.? Your blood medicine needs to be at the same time. If not, your INR is going to be different. So,
yeah, that's true. And you don't think about that. But, you know, everyone goes from, maybe taking an aspirin in the morning to, and now that's actually something they teach you in the hospital is they get the weekly pill boxes out, and you have to practice before you get discharged, practice that. But then you also have to figure out how to remember to, when you're low, reorder your prescriptions. And it's, that sounds so simple and so easy for everyone normal day to day, but the thought processes that have to go into us remembering, just remembering things in general. I know my short-term memory was a big deal in the beginning too. But everybody has to find their own coping skills. So for me, from coping skills, what I learned, I don't know what people did years ago when we didn't have smartphones. I would email myself from my phone, like when I was here at Bind and I knew I needed to do something when I got home, or if I was out wherever I was, I needed to do something when I got home. I would email myself at home. So when I got home and checked my email, I'd go, oh, that's right, I need to reorder this pill, or I need to do this, or I need to check that. So, and again, everyone's different, but every brain injured survivor has to relearn all the basics that you don't think about. And we have one friend, Carl. Well, y'all know Carl. Carl H., he's been a co-host with me. He likes to say, we're the children and the staff here are the adults. Because after a brain injury, you do feel like a child again because you're relearning everything, how to walk, how to talk, how to eat. And I didn't even mention that earlier, how to eat. So for a lot of stroke survivors, I'm not going to say this right, and my speech therapists are going to come back and get me, but that's okay. But because of the way the esophagus is and whatnot, and I don't know if it was because of the facial droop I had on the left side because of the paralyzation, they worry about you being able to swallow and choking yourself to death. So you have to go through a swallow test before you can eat real food. So I started out on like thickened liquids, just nasty, nasty stuff. Thickened liquids and pureed foods. And then you gradually, you have to take these tests. You swallow barium. They watch, where it goes. And if you're swallowing correctly, I think I took it twice before I was allowed to eat real food again. So, who that hasn't had a brain injury thinks that you have to relearn how to eat? Yeah. Or how to just swallow water. Like, I couldn't even drink just water. I had to eat ice chips in the very beginning.
Yeah, I definitely get it. Like, there's just different steps of recovery. Like, what step are you on? And recovery takes your whole life. Like, you just have to relearn things that you didn't think you would have to relearn.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly don't remember very fully, like, my first couple of days in the hospital. But I remember very clearly, like, my days into recovery and me believing in myself. And I was a runner before the stroke. And I literally signed up for the Chicago Marathon. I was still in the hospital. But I was like, well, I can walk now. I can walk now. So I'm sure by October I will be a runner, right? So I didn't understand my limits, my physical limits. But also, like, even when I was already in Texas, understanding my cognitive disability, well, not fully disability, but my how the stroke changed my my functional like skills, like how when am I going to be able to manage a team? And that was very difficult. And like, how do I multitask? How can I think about big solutions in a big picture kind of way? That was definitely very difficult. And we also have a great episode coming up within this couple of weeks about someone that just became, was able to start working, even when he was in recovery at I don't know if we can say this, but CNS, how was he able to manage recovery and being able to go back to work? And that's really just questioning and understanding your own skills and what level are you in, and being very clear on yourself, and then also who you talk to, right? That was a very interesting conversation that we had. How do you do that? And then also just the people around you being supportive. And he had some pretty cool, a pretty cool boss that was able to stand with him.
So yeah, it is interesting. I mean, there's all those little things, and I know we kind of touched on it, and I'm gonna go back, but like we talked a little bit about socializing and friendships and communicating, but unfortunately, after a brain injury, I'm not gonna say this happens to all brain injuries, but to a lot of us, we realize that I'm not gonna say we lose friends, but people don't know how to deal with you, so they just find it easier to not. So making new friends is fine, and it gets easier, especially if you're like Kezia and I, and pretty social anyway. Doesn't take much, but
yeah. But honestly, like I was like a little social butterfly, like everywhere. I talked to everyone, and it does look like I talked to everyone. But I had a great sleep last night. I definitely make sure to get my 8 hours of sleep, beauty sleep before. Talking to all of the listeners, talking to you, talking to all brain injury survivors here at Bind. But if I'm not like like slept well, if I just didn't wake up to have a good day with all my energy, like my whole brain charged to 100, it is so hard. It is so hard. And the socializing part was definitely hard to understand, I think, on my end, because I was like always judging myself, like, oh my god, I went to get pizza in Chicago, my mouth is already really like so hungry for pizza, but anyway, I went to go get pizza with my friends, and it was like the first time I was pretty comfortable going into social platforms and go somewhere with a lot of people, and I was with these amazing women that were there to support me through my recovery, to support my friends, I mean, my family, to learn about aphasia and all of these things. And I was like, I'm so ready for this. And then I get to this pizza place in Chicago, and it was packed, and there was music, and it looked so fun. But at that time, I somehow found myself in the corner with amazing women there supporting me. But just I was having such a hard time to keep up with the conversations. And that day I was like, I can't do this. And I still have a hard time doing that. I prefer one-on-one conversations because I truly can gather the conversation to 100%. And traveling and meeting my friends, I need that like 100% and my full attention to that. And I would love to meet in a pizza place with a bunch of people, with music, with you know, but I would need to stay in Chicago for like the full year to like get, you know, be able to do that again. And at first I felt so bad, like they probably think that I don't want to be here. They probably think that I'm ignoring. They probably think I'm being bored, but really that's not the issue at all. It's just the difficulty of conversing in large spaces.
No, and Kezia, that's a good point. I mean, you understand that. I don't quite understand that, but I have a really good friend who also had a stroke, and noise is a trigger for him. I mean, it causes panic attacks, anxiety attacks. It's actually caused a couple of extra TIAs. So like if we go out to a restaurant and the music is really, really loud, he can't concentrate anymore. He puts on noise canceling headphones like this. He may even just have to leave, you know, and we understand that. Like, and he's a big hockey fan, but I can't take him to the hockey game with me because it's just too loud. It's too stimulating. Some of our brains just can't recover to that point where we can handle that much stimulation that seems normal to anyone else. I mean, can you imagine being a big rock concert fan and after a stroke, you can't go back to a rock concert? A, it's too loud, too much music, too many people. I mean, I worry about people for my balance, that someone's going to just knock me over. So I know that it's kind of scary, but we just, like we said, we want to just kind of share a little bit about our lives. We know you've learned a lot about us over the time. But the next couple episodes after this one are, like we said, you'll be hearing from a different couple of people, like the chaplain who's on communication, a gentleman who had a stroke who's gone back to work. We have, trying to remember who else we have.
Yeah, we have all these conversations about day-to-day life and how things have changed after a brain injury.
Yeah, communication and coping skills and just different things like that. So
yeah, I do want to thank all of you listeners for connecting with us and just listening to our conversation on Thursday. We really appreciate all of you guys watching our episodes on Thursdays. I do also want to remind you that anything that you want to learn from Bind Waves, just contact us. So thank you so much.
Again, like Kezia said, and if you want to contact us, that email is bindwaves@thebind.org. You can also follow us on Instagram @bindwaves, and then you can check out our website, thebind.org/bindwaves. There is also there's a link to our email, and there is a form there if you would like to become a podcast guest to fill out and say what you want to talk about, what you think needs to be heard or said or shared. And as well, if you're looking to be a member of Bind, there's a form there to fill out. So again, just check out all that good information.
And don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to your on your favorite platform for Bind Waves. You could also tell all your friends and family to follow us. And obviously, go onto YouTube to check it out and see our faces.
And again, thank you. And every Thursday, you can find us on all your favorite platforms. So until next time.
Until next time.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Bind Waves and continue to support Bind and our nonprofit mission.
We support brain injury survivors as they reconnect into the life, the community, and their workplace.
And we couldn't do that without great listeners like you. We appreciate each and every one of you. Continue watching. Until next time.
Until next time.